Okay, 23-083, was that a no-show or is she here?
No-show so far.
No, okay, we'll skip that for now then. Let's see, 23-081 is also a no-show?
Correct.
Okay, so we'll go to 22-503.
That's.
Excuse me?
No, not yet.
Not yet.
We have to give them a little bit of time to come, depending on traffic, depending on circumstances.
John Grasso for the issuing authority.
And would you please identify your witness?
Yes, with me is Mr. Paul Kennepick, who is also a peace officer. That's his testimony we'll establish.
Thank you, okay.
Spell his last name for me, please.
And you don't state your name, you're the appellant in this case.
The witness, I need, can I get your last spelling?
Sure, K-E-N-E-F-I-C-K.
Thank you.
Okay, so would you like to make a brief opening statement?
Yes, thank you. The record and the evidence will reflect that at least one, and by admission more, outrageous statements were made by the appellant, which resulted in the revocation of his permit, and the issuing authority remains committed to the revocation of the permit.
Okay. So would you like to make a brief opening statement? You'll have a chance to present your full case, but just a few sentences about why you think you should have your permit.
I tried all the channels that were set up, and with the person who complained that of what I said, and you know, eventually I just decided to get a little egregious, and you know, when writing it, I said this is going to probably make them go away without making a threat. And you know, I understand that they felt threatened, and looking back, I've learned and become a, you know, better person, I hope. You know, certainly channels have been discussed where this could been totally not happened, and that should have been what I did, but now I'm aware of that, and those statements were not how I want to represent myself.
Thank you. Okay, you may proceed, sir.
Mr. Kennepick, a general question regarding your background. Are you an active peace officer now?
Yes, I am.
Would you sketch for us, please, your background in police services?
I began law enforcement in 1987 with the town of Guilford for 3 years. Then I went on to the state police for a 21-year career. I retired there as a troop commander of Troop F in Westbrook. And I went to the town of Essex to be a full-time officer for 12 years. And almost 2 years ago, I dropped down to part-time status. And I work as an officer, maintain my certification in Essex, work when they need me. And I'm also doing accreditation work for 3 resident trooper towns to get them post-council certified. Accreditation.
Mr. Kennepick, do you recognize the applicant?
Yes, I do.
Have you made his acquaintance before today?
Yes, I have.
When and what were the circumstances under which you made his acquaintance?
It was in December of 2021 during the course of a criminal investigation I was assigned to look into.
And what were the circumstances of this criminal investigation?
Well, on the December 13th of 2021, we received a complaint from KinderCare, which is a daycare center in the in Centerbrook, which is a section of borough of Essex, that they had received a threatening email. So in responding there and talking to the director of the Centerbrook KinderCare, come to find out the email was sent to their corporate headquarters in Portland, Oregon. However, how it works, when someone inquires for daycare services at this daycare, it's a national company, they fill out a contact form. The contact form goes to corporate headquarters in Oregon, and they have all their personal information in there. Oregon will say, and they'll identify the daycare center they wish to use, which was the one in Centerbrook. They send that contact form down to Centerbrook. The director there reaches out to see what services they can provide for the appellant. That had taken place, but in the meantime, corporate takes that same contact form. They send it over to their marketing department. And the marketing department sends out marketing emails, which the appellant is receiving for, you know, quite a few months. I think it was close to a year. And that's what, come to find out in my investigation, he became frustrated with trying to unsubscribe. That wasn't working. So this threatening email was sent, and I was called to conduct my investigation.
What was the language of the threatening email?
If you don't mind, I refer to my notes to just get it accurate.
You may refresh your recollection if you need to by glancing at your notes.
It started out, "Hello. I've been unsuccessful in attempts to unsubscribe. At every email for the past year, I've unsubscribed using your form, and yet I continue to receive emails. For every email I receive in the future, one child at your centers will die. All the addresses are listed online, and I'm sure the media will pick up on it eventually. Regards. Fucking remove this email address."
How did you pursue the investigation?
Well, after talking with the director in Centerbrook, I reached out to Troy Hall, who is in corporate in Portland, Oregon, just for assistance. His tech team worked in the backgrounds of their computer systems to identify the email and the IP address that email came from. They were in the email heading, it also had the appellant's name in the email. And there were two email addresses. One was a black Chrome with an ending to it, and the other one was a black Chrome with the appellant's last name in it. And that was the one identified as where the email came from. So with that, with the appellant's name that was on the contact form that was sent to me and the phone number was given, I inquired with the assistance of Central District Major Crime and gave them the telephone number. They were able to identify the subscriber and the name attached to that cell phone number, which was the appellant's name. With that, we did a little more background. I did a little more background with internet searches between his name and the phone number, and those both attached to a web page advertising a stump grinding business, which he does operate. And it also connected to a LinkedIn page, which provided his name and also a photo of him. A DMV inquiry provided his photo, which matched the LinkedIn page in his name, and also a special license in firearms showed that he had a pistol permit. The information on there both matched the appellant. So at that point, we're pretty sure, you know, who the person is that we want to speak to. So I figure he's a local guy. I'm going straight to the point. I gave him a phone call. And I did. He didn't answer. I left a message. He called back very shortly after that afternoon. And this would be on the 14th.
Of what month?
I'm sorry, 14th of December 2021. So the day after the complaint came in to me. I asked, I'd like to meet him, to talk with him. And I specifically told him that I was calling in reference to the email he sent. And I used that wording. He immediately apologized, acknowledged what he did was wrong, shouldn't have done it. He said as soon as he sent it, he knew he made a mistake. And I said, well, I'd just like to meet you and verify who you are. When can we meet? So he mentioned the following morning he was going to be in Iverton, which is another borough of Essex. So I met him that morning and positively identified him. We had a short conversation, and my investigation went on from there to end up with an arrest warrant. Search warrant, arrest warrant.
Let me ask you to pause and say more about your initial telephone conversation with him on December 14th, 2000. of 21?
It was short. We had spoke, like I said, he did admit that he sent the email, and he acknowledged it was wrong. He was apologetic. What I thought was kind of off, but in the end, he stopped me before he hung up. He said, I just want to know, did the email work? Am I unsubscribed now? And of course, he was, because when I stopped Hope at Troy Hall in Portland, Oregon, my first thing was to make sure this guy's email is unsubscribed. So I answered, yes, it was, and that was pretty much the end of that conversation until I saw him the next morning.
Now, the next morning, would you recount in as much detail as you can recollect the back and forth of that conversation?
It was very similar to the previous day in regards to him acknowledging that he sent the email, acknowledging it was wrong. And he did state that he was just very frustrated with all the emails that he was getting. And he has gotten emails like this in the past where he gets a lot of emails, and he has sent emails like this to those people in the past, and it stopped the emails. And I did tell him, well, that really is not the appropriate way to get people to stop sending you emails. And once again, a short conversation, and that was the end of that for that day.
Thank you. No further questions.
Okay, you'll have a chance to put your case on, but if you have any questions for the police officer, you can ask them now.
I don't think I have any questions for you. I'm just going to move right along, and I've been through the court process, and I've been...
Okay, all right. Well, okay. If you have no questions, the board has a chance to ask questions now. So is there any questions from the board?
I have a question.
Dr. Conrad.
For the witness. Did you inform him after your conversations that you were going to revoke his permit?
Spoke with him on the phone on the 14th, in person on the 15th. And no, I don't believe I advised him on the 15th I was going to revoke his permit.
How was the appellant informed then?
May I answer that?
Sure.
I'm happy to answer that if you'd like.
Sure.
First of all, I'm just going to say the local town does not revoke the permit. That's the state.
Yeah. So I'm just interested in the process
that.
Because that wasn't commented on. Maybe the state can clarify that for me.
I would say, Doctor, that there were further proceedings which have resolved and resulted in erasure. And so the extent to which I can speak to that, I'm uncertain. I have sidestepped that.
And again, I'm not here to hide anything. I've made mistakes, I've grown from them. Certainly, going into this, previously I had taken a course, with an attorney, what constitutes a threat in the state of Connecticut, and I was kind of aware of that when I wrote this. I've never denied that.
I think the question was, how were you informed that your permit was being revoked?
After I had a feeling that might be where it's going. After we talked in Ivoryton the next morning, I was watching a boy who calls me uncle, even though I'm not really related. I was babysitting at 5 in the morning, and I believe this is a 5 a.m. email. So I was babysitting. Officer Kenefick stopped by, advised me what was going on. I'm aware of the red flag laws, and I was just like, oh, here we go. I just really, I fumbled the football in this one. And so I had a feeling that it was going to be revoked. Mr. Kenefick didn't say anything at the time. I did mention to Mr. Kenefick, I'm teaching an all-women's pistol permit class tomorrow. If we are going to do this, can we do it after tomorrow? And whether or not that had anything to play into when my arrest date, it was during that actual arrest 2 days later. I was at work, and he said that he wanted to meet me. I walked off the property, and they took my firearm from me. arrested me, and when we got to the station, they asked for my property. One of the items was a pistol permit, and he advised me that this was being revoked. Or one of the officers did. There was a desk.
It was either myself or Trooper Martinez.
Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Any other questions from the board? Okay, now you can present your case however you'd like.
Okay. So this has been through the court system. It's been several years of, you know, trying to clear my name, and I have done that. You know, certainly, you know, I said mistakes happen. This was, you know, a busy guy that had tried every thing he could. And you guys had mentioned that anything I present to you is public record, because I have some. Okay, can I just say I've seen when this arrest happened and I called my lawyer, I have a prepaid legal service because I am involved in the firearms world. And when I called them, I said, hey, listen, these guys don't have a warrant. You know, they're asking to come into my house and see, you know, take my firearms. You know, we discussed that. And I have no problem. I showed the officers, you know, these are all my firearms. You know, I think I had 13 registered with the state. They left with about 40. You know, I wasn't hiding anything, you know. I had, you know, knowing the law, I could have prepared, but I'm not looking to do that. What I'm looking to do is do everything legal. During the last law change, I did register another assault weapon while the police, you know, had my firearms, because I want to stay on top of the law, and those firearms have been returned, as well as my ammunition. My wife is a pistol permit holder. But I went through three psychological evaluations, one with a forensic psychologist advised by my lawyer, who said that, you know, perfectly normal. With the state of Connecticut, sent me to see a psychologist. That one I was really worried about, because that one, I don't know what I'm walking into. Who's the state psychologist? Is this like what NPR says, where I'm just going to leave with a diagnosis and, you know, lose everything I've worked for right then and there? And they said, no, you got a little anxiety, you know, move along. So I did bring a copy of paperwork that from a psychologist that says I am no, I highlighted it just because I know your time is short as well. Clinician evaluates the propensity towards physical and emotional violence as being the same as any other reasonable person. And these are all things that I did, you know, on my own, you know, because I understand how deeply offensive this can be. I understand what state we're in. I've been a firearms owner since before 2013, and I've grown up with firearms. I understand that, you know, and I try to tell my students when I'm teaching a class that, you know, when a bullet leaves a firearm, it's like light from a candle. You can't take it back, and where it goes, you know, you have to own it. So I'm trying to own my personal history here, and, you know, and move forward. I do have a stack of licenses. Does this has my name on it? Does this become public searchable record? I would.
Normally, when you apply, when you appeal the case, determination that the permit's going to be revoked, normally we ask for you to submit those at the time, so we have time to look at them in advance of the hearing and digest whatever information is there and maybe have questions for you about them. And we haven't seen these, so.
Frankly, the mental health has not been brought up as an issue.
No, it's true.
It's an issue of a threatening email and probably others, apparently, from them. Certainly we'll ask about the previous one. And there is a 10-day, the letter says, everything has to be to the appellant, to the issuing authority and or 10 days prior to the hearing for it to be admitted.
Okay.
Yeah, so we've heard your testimony about that. But
may I just speak about what I brought? And if anyone wants copies, I'm happy to hand them out. I brought 9 copies for everybody on the board. I know.
I don't think that would be appropriate at this point.
Okay, can I just then just tell a little bit about myself?
Yes.
This is what I prepared, you know?
Yes.
I'm an EMT. I'm a certified Stop the Bleed instructor. I'm a firearms instructor, certified home firearm safety, certified pistol. I've worked with fire departments and EMTs to train them on firearms. Women often say that my demeanor in class is very welcoming, and you know, I've taught a lot of all-women's classes, not because I'm looking for that, but because they say, hey, we got a group of X amount of women that want to, you know, speak to someone that respects them and get their firearms permit. I'm a member of the local CCDL. I'm a benefactor member to the NRA, a lifetime member of the GOA. I have a membership to the Sprague Rod and Gun Club that I've been a member there since 2016, as well as shot at many other facilities in the state. So I have outlets and training. I'm a hunter, and I find that that's very important because I, you know, enjoy, you know, fishing with my son now and hunting, and that's something I want to do with him. Not that that's, you know, what we're doing here today is preventing anything. And I'm an EMT in town, as well as a local volunteer. I take care of a local preserve, as well as offer my business services to that. Men's there. I'm also a member of the Coast Guard Auxiliary. I'm an over 10-year member, and one of these documents, you know, says that I, you know, 8 years ago I had about 750 hours in with them, assisting the Coast Guard's goals. You know, all of this, you know, is stuff that I like doing to support Connecticut and the community. I enjoy training people on firearms, and you know, I'm a very busy guy, and I made a mistake, and I'd like to.
Would you like to cross-examine the appellant?
No, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Do you have any other witnesses you'd like to call?
This is my beautiful wife. I brought her for moral support today. I told her today I'm a little anxious. I want to fall asleep and crawl the wall at the same time. But, you know, she's just my lovely lady. And do you have anything you want to say?
Well, before we do that, the board should ask.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. My mistake.
One witness at a time.
Okay. Does the board have any questions?
I just have a question that's a clarification because I simply don't know. Are you still allowed to be a firearms instructor with your pistol permit revoked?
It makes it a little more difficult. Certainly, I have my firearms returned and my ammunition returned. Us having children, when this happened, my son was a year old, so we were discussing getting more safes. When the firearms were returned, I went to Tractor Supply and bought another safe, so now I lock my ammunition up as well as the firearms. Yeah, I can still teach classes, but it makes it very difficult, whereas if Mr. Kenefick wanted to make my life tough again because I don't have a pistol permit, you know, it's wishy-washy. If I don't have a pistol permit, can I instruct people to take the class to then get checked through the state to get
the permit? Were your pistols returned to you?
Yes, everything has been returned. This has been dismissed, I guess. Erased. It was erased from the courts.
Okay, that's kind of perplexing to me as a board member for an appellant to have a revoked permit, but in fact have all his weapons and ammunition returned to him.
That's actually pretty common.
Yeah. It's still perplexing to me, even though it's common.
He can't buy or sell guns. He can't carry them in public, but you can certainly have them at home. Is that?
And can he use them, handle them in a class?
And I'm not going to go farther than that, other than to say probably in his home. That would be my opinion, but I don't know.
But not outside his home.
Correct.
Okay, so that's where it's ambiguous.
If I might.
Yes, sir.
Only because the appellant hasn't stated this. He has a very nice classroom right there in his property. Attached to his garage.
I spent a lot of money because I want people to go into this with respect. I have a boardroom, whiteboard. We had a bigger TV in my classroom than our house for a long time, it's just, you know, one of my buddies was in there before I got my firearms back, and he's just like, wow, it's a mess in here, and it's, you know, yeah, I let my sister store some stuff here, she was getting a house, and just sort of depressing to be in here, you know, because it's not, I built it because it is a way I support the family as well. You know, right now it's cleaned up though. It's, I'm hoping to get back to it.
I have another question for you. All of us get unsolicited emails, and it is vexing. Sometimes the unsubscribe mechanism works, and many times it doesn't. How do you feel that you're going to handle issues like this going forward? Because there are lots of companies and entities that send unsolicited emails repeatedly.
So that's a great question. So, you know, I understand the block mechanism and forward to the trash. You know, this being an organization and that I'm going to have kids in daycare for 5 years, this is an organization I wanted to go away because I, you know, now we've learned we don't want to use corporate daycare. We prefer a small setting, local daycares through the schools. So that was part of the reason why I just wanted them to go away, because I possibly did want to do business with them in the future. I wasn't really sure at the time. I should have just put them to spam. You know, at this point, of course, I'm never going to do business with that company.
But I'm asking in terms of any other company or entity. Since this December of 2021, you've gotten other emails that you don't appreciate getting. What is your approach to handling those?
So, you know, like I said, the block button and, you know, forwarding to spam. But my attorney at the time said, you know, you pay me $300 and I'll handle this next time. And you never get an email from them again. And I actually used that with the Home Depot. And, you know, so I could use a lawyer if I wanted to. And, you know, money well spent. I certainly have spent a lot of time and money on this. And, you know.
Does that mean that you've learned not to put threats in writing or to make verbal threats to individuals for vexing but relative to other issues in this world, insignificant emails?
I'm not gonna risk the relationship with my wife ever again. I think she would leave me if I ever had to do this again.
May I ask your wife her opinion on this? How have you advised your husband to approach this?
Well, he has definitely learned to slow down a little bit and to take the time to figure out how to eliminate the emails or whatever it is that's bothering him in a far less aggressive way now. We talk about it more, but I mean...
We talked about this when you said... You are such an idiot. You're going to regret that, I bet.
Yeah.
And then Mr. Penefit called.
Yeah.
Any other questions by the board?
What happened in court? What was the final disposition? I mean, you jumped to it was erased, but was it a program? Was it AR? It sounded like you had court ordered psychological exams.
I used a program.
What program?
I don't recall.
Okay.
What was advised to me was, I was advised by several attorneys. Some of which said, I can get this thrown out of court easy if you want to litigate it. The attorney that I chose said, you will likely lose on the breach of peace charge, which I get that someone in Oregon had their peace breached.
I'm trying to get, what was the disposition of the case now?
It was sealed and disposed of.
It was a program. You don't know, was it accelerated rehabilitation?
No, I chose not to use that, and I guess I don't know.
I don't know what other program there could be then for you.
I'm not a lawyer. I don't understand.
All right. Well, did you have a probationary period?
Yes, I was on probation for 2 years.
What were the conditions of that probation?
The conditions were no firearms and during the course of the program. And I had to see a psychologist, who is where I've got the letter that you guys did not want to see that says that...
No, it's not indefinite.
You know, so...
So you had probation for 2 years. When did the probation end?
I was told, the probation officer told me about a month before we went back to court. I don't have to see you again as far as this is concerned.
The question, when was it ended? When did it end?
Oh.
You were arrested at the end of 2021. I would imagine the sentence was sometime after that and then 2 years plus. So it's not that long ago that probation ended, I would imagine. Did it end this year?
Between courts and probation, it was almost 3 years, yeah.
So when did it end?
May of
this year.
This year, yeah.
Yeah, so a month or two ago.
A month or two ago, yeah.
Okay. Now, you testified about a whole bunch of experience you have with firearms. You're an instructor. You're teaching people. Why did you jump to, I'm going to kill kids if you don't stop? All the other things you could have done.
The language never said that.
Okay, you said someone's going to die.
As a corporation, a national corporation, I mean, that's very matter of fact. It's a matter of fact statement. It's not a threat. And it wasn't intended to be a threat. It was just, what can I do, toes on the line, that's going to get these people to think he's not worth the effort, let's go away.
All right. Can you understand that people thought that was a threat to the children of their daycare centers of a national company?
In hindsight, it was poor decision making. I wasn't thinking about that at the time, but I know that I did not want to write a threat. I know what a threat is, and I did not want to.
But it's interesting, even sitting here today, you don't see it as a threatening email.
I understand that they perceived it as a threat, and if someone said that to me and my family, I would take my family and leave the situation.
The issuing authority testified that you told them you had done this previously. You used a similar tactic in the past.
That I sort of cringe at. I don't recall that.
Do you recall saying that to the officer when he questioned you?
No.
Is it testimony you may have done it? And you just don't remember didn't do it?
I don't remember any situations where I did that previously. Certainly, I've asked people to remove me from their mailing lists.
Have you used similar language with other companies to get off of email addresses?
I certainly haven't in the past 3 years.
Okay. At any time?
Have I used strong language in the past?
It could be considered a threat.
No, I would never. It's a tough situation. Nobody's ever felt threatened. Obviously, I've never been in this situation before.
What do you mean nobody's ever felt threatened?
I like the things I say and do. I've never worried about being a threat to anybody.
Yeah, but some people felt that it was a threat because you ended up getting arrested for it. Someone made a complaint and you got arrested for this case anyway.
That's just stating the facts. I understand where you're going with this.
I'm really not going anywhere. I'm trying to see where you stand today and if there's a likelihood that you would do this again. And you're kind of saying, I didn't mean to be threatening. I don't think it was a threat, but that's the way they perceived it.
Well, I know it wasn't a threat. But I understand that they perceived it as a threat, and in the future, I'm definitely going to reel it in. People don't want to hear
mean-hearted
things.
What does it mean, reel it in?
What does it mean to reel it in?
Yeah.
To not get aggravated to the point that I write down mean things to a pointless end. I think that if I would have taken out the second paragraph of that email, they probably would not have listened because there were previous emails where I was, acting like a normal human being, and it just escalated to the fact I didn't think anyone was reading these things, you know, and then come to find out.
You testified that you wouldn't do business with that company. Why not?
Because they're a corporation, and I've seen corporate daycare. You know, we have two kids.
That had nothing to do with this case, or are they making a complaint against you?
No, not at all.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions from the board? I'll tell you, you mentioned in your testimony a thing about you can't ever call a bullet back, okay? And you recognize as a shooter and a lifetime gun owner and living in Connecticut how somebody could be upset over a statement that from a gun owner that says, you know, if you don't stop this, a child will die. And I mean, that's...
I feel that's important, though, that at no time did I mention that I was a firearms owner. There was no firearms mentioned. You know, it's just...
No, but my point is, you know, as a firearms owner, what happened in Connecticut with children dying, and you say, you know, for every email I get, a child will die. You know, my point being, you know, you can't call a bullet back, and you can't call your words back, and they obviously had consequences. I mean, there was a big police investigation over this thing. People felt the words are disruption and alarm cause of this thing, and so your intent is almost irrelevant in this case. I know maybe you say you didn't mean it as a threat, but certainly the rest of the world could take it as a threat, and that's the problem here. Mm-hmm. I just want you to understand that.
No, I completely agree with that. You know, and I get that it was perceived in a way that my intention was for these people to say, this person's not worth dealing with.
We understand your intent, and my point is, a statement like that, your intent is irrelevant to the people outside hearing it.
Yeah.
And it's like a bullet goes someplace you didn't intend it to go, and it hurts somebody. You didn't intend it, but they got hurt.
Yeah, one of these things without firing a shot, you know, there was no, this is a big corporation. They have places everywhere. No location, no motive, like no, you know, no, no weapon, no, there's not, it was airy language and it was wrong of me to do. And, you know, I don't feel that, you know, there was definitely, this is something that I can learn and teach other people from. You know, you may be following the letter of the law, but you need to think of what the other person is perceiving
exactly. Okay. And I think that's why we're here.
Okay. Do you know what happened at the daycare, sorry?
My understanding from what Officer Kenefick told me was that they looked at that email and picked two of their daycare locations to close for a period of time. I've never spoken to either of those locations. I don't even know where they are. This was an email. This all started with, hey, how much does daycare cost? And, you know, it turned into calls, daily emails, and it was just absurd, sometimes multiple times a day.
Yeah. The notes here say that 18 children were kept home from KinderCare by their parents out of concern for this threat. And I think that's what's the kind of the missing link here. There was an outcome, there was an impact, and I did appreciate your candor, but it's hard to. I guess I should be asking the question, but it's hard to get over the fact that...
And those kids, I have two kids now, I feel terrible. Yeah. Especially when the daycare closes for us and we have a kid that's sick and we have to juggle that responsibility.
Yeah.
I mean, if I could, if I could take it all back. We had a daycare close on us and we set up a daycare in our home to cover until people could find other daycares. You know, I hired two people.
Dr. Conrad.
Here's my concern. It was a veiled threat. And my concern is that I've really not heard you acknowledge personal responsibility for a veiled threat. You put the onus of responsibility on the recipient to interpret whether your threat was legitimate or not. And so that's going to influence my decision.
Did you want to have your wife say anything on your behalf? You don't have to, it's just...
Well, I can speak on his character. I don't know if that's helpful, but...
Well, it's up to him if he wants to. If he wants you to say something...
Is there anything I missed, honey?
Well, I will say that the pistol permit classes that he does teach does help our family financially as well. So that is something that he uses during the winter to help with our income. And we have been feeling that over the past few years without having that, because he hasn't been able to teach anything. He's always been very helpful in our community. A lot of people who found out about the incident were shocked because it's so out of character for him to say what he said. He's always the first one to jump up and like offer help. So we're, you know, he has learned that he cannot, you know, sit behind a keyboard and act differently than he does in real life, because that's not how he would be in real life.
Why do you think it's so difficult for him to admit that it was a veiled threat and that he takes personal responsibility for that?
I'm not sure why he is reacting like that. I mean, he has been very apologetic to me, to other people.
He hasn't been particularly apologetic before us, though, this morning.
He's probably on the defense, that's most of it.
That's what puts someone at risk, to act impulsively, unfortunately.
Do you have any questions of the witness?
No, I don't.
Board have any questions of the witness? Okay, I guess we're time to make our brief closing statements. So I think you've said your case pretty thoroughly. Is there anything you want to add to that?
Requesting an I'm sorry, I am sorry, and I'm sorry that this affected people. I thought I was dealing with a faceless corporation out in Seattle, and local kids actually and families got hurt by this, and that sucks. And they're not the ones that came after me. They've been behind. So I understand what you're saying. And I feel that I have been up against the corporation and the state and every layer of this the whole time. And I'm also defending myself. I wasn't aware. I thought that this had already passed, and I went and applied for my local permit. The day I got my firearms back. So I wasn't really
If you could put aside the issues of your feelings of having to defend yourself against a corporation or a governmental authority, and just speak as an individual in terms of how you feel you want to conduct yourself going forward, that would be very helpful, because I'm left with a certain impression, and I can understand everything that you've gone through and how that can make you feel defensive. But I'd like to give you an opportunity to just speak as a person in terms of how you feel you want to conduct yourself going forward.
I mean, I've learned that all I care about is my family. This whole thing has been contentious with me and my wife. Certainly she doesn't want to hear it. I need to stay home and love my family is priority number one. And, taking my son out fishing, being a community member, that, people look at me, hey, call Rob, he's got a tractor, call Rob, he knows how to fix it, call Rob, he knows, how to set the lending library, you remind me, I did, and...
If someone gets under your skin going forward, how are you going to conduct yourself?
I usually, and what I've used in the past and in real life, is I just, no emotion, I just flatline. And I go at it as a factual, as a factual basis, and then if I need to leave, I leave. But there's no reason to push a situation, and certainly online, there's no reason to push a situation. It's not a Call of Duty match where you're yelling at somebody in Kansas that's probably 15 and somehow knows more than you. Going forward, this has just made me grow as a person that is aware of my presence online and that has real effect in some areas. I manage a couple presences online for local organizations, and I've discussed that with those people. You know, they're like, what the heck, Rob, this is so... going forward, I want to get my life back to what I had built it to. I take all the precautions. I do all the, I try to check all the boxes when I do things and be a professional at it.
You have a closing statement?
Yes, thank you. The appellant characterizes the email as airy language, quote unquote. No, in fact, it was a blunt threat to kill. And it was introduced into evidence, and if I may, I'm just going to reread it. It's rather brief. It reads, "Hello, I've been unsuccessful in attempts to unsubscribe. At every email for the past year, I've unsubscribed using your form, and yet I continue to receive emails. For every email I receive in the future, one child at your centers will die. All the addresses are listed online, and I'm sure the media will pick up on it eventually, period. Regards, effing remove this email address," unquote. And I'll remind the board, too, that the appellant said to Officer Kenefick on the 15th of December, 2021, that he used similar language to good effect in the past. No matter what one's community service, there are some lines that once crossed just cannot be, there can be no retreat. And the issuing authority stands by the revocation.
Additional comments by the board? Okay, I guess we will vote. Okay, Chief Rosenzweig?
Issuing authority.
Colonel Lewis?
Issuing authority.
Mr. Gray?
Issuing authority.
Dr. Conrad?
Issuing authority at this time.
And I vote for the issuing authority at this time. So it's unanimous, 5-0 issuing authority. Thank you both very much.